Thank you so much for every prayer that was prayed on my behalf. I appreciate every one of them. I said to the surgeon just before he did surgery on me, I said, I don't know if you're a man of faith or not, but I am. And I want you to know that we had about 300 people at least praying for us. And so I appreciate that so much as I stand before you tonight, healthy and able. My assignment is to help us think about wisdom, what it is, our need for it, and where to find it. Wisdom is often defined this way. It has knowledge in which there is good information. And then there's wisdom, which is the skill to use that information. Several words are regularly associated with wisdom: insight, knowledge, understanding, prudence, discretion, learning, guidance, discernment. We need some of all of these. But we can have all of these and still not be wise. So this lectureship is designed to help us wise up. And for my part, it is to help us get smart. Well, I need to tell you that Maxwell Smart is probably not going to help us too much. So let's get to work in the book of Proverbs. It will help us. It is far more reliable. So here are some things I want to get before us from the get-go. First, I want to talk about the perspective of the book. I just want to get this out in the open. I want to get it out there early. And that is to recognize that dominant male perspective in the book. Proverbs is written as a father's advice to his son. This is the perspective of the book. I didn't choose it. It was chosen by an ancient writer. First, I would simply say that there has to be a perspective. And then second, I would point out that he or she together work sometimes, but not too well in the bigger pictures, especially when you get down to the pronouns. So here's a sentence. Let's just try it. He or she went to the library, and he or she picked up a book and went to his or her house. And there he took a photo of her, or where she took a photo of him. And so it's kind of awkward and cumbersome. We don't talk that way. We don't write that way. And so it's hard to write and talk with a purely inclusive language. So we often default to the male gender. The fact is that Proverbs, especially chapters 1 through 9, is almost certainly written with a male-dominant perspective. And it bears that mark. And I'll say to you, it does not discredit the book. It does not cause it to be outdated. It reflects the reality of its time. It's a father who talks to his son. And I suspect this father knows something important about his son. And that is, he knows that boys do dumb things. And boys together do dumber things. So he writes from this perspective. So what do girls do with the book of Proverbs? Well, it really isn't so hard, and women have been doing it for a long time. You read the book, and you flip the text to the other side of the relational equation. So let's practice that just a little. Here's how the book reads. Proverbs 21, verse 9. It's better to live alone in the corner of an attic than with a quarrelsome wife in a lovely home. Here's the flip. It's better to live alone in the corner of an attic than with a quarrelsome husband in a lovely home. Not that hard, is it? Let's try another one. Chapter 27, verse 15. A continual dripping on a rainy day and a quarrelsome wife are alike. Well, here's the girl's read. A continual dripping on a rainy day and a quarrelsome husband are alike. Not that hard. But don't miss this. Don't miss this. Wisdom is personified in the book of Proverbs. And how do you suppose she is personified? You're right. She is personified as a woman. If the woman draws the short straw when it comes to the perspective of the book, it is surely balanced by the fact that wisdom is personified as a woman. And I'll tell you, the next to the last line in the book must be the best one of all. You know what that is? Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. That's about the best line there is of all. So that's what I wanted to say about the perspective of Proverbs. I want to talk just a little bit about the arrangement of Proverbs. You just flip through the pages and you'll notice a difference in chapters 1 to 9 and chapters 10 to 31. The first part is made up of longer sections, some poems, some poetically arranged advice, and other types of literary units. The second part is a grouping of collections. Collections of proverbs, mostly two-liners. And this is the way the two-liners work. The first line states the truth, and the second line completes the truth. Now, some longer passages are included, and some of those are going to be addressed this weekend. But for the most part, the collections are short, to the point, and random. So here's what happens. In the first part, the father advises his son to choose wisdom, which is personified as lady wisdom or woman wisdom. In the second part, the wisdom is presented, what I say, is in the raw. That is, there's no context, there's no introduction, there's no buildup. It's just like, here it is, and you think about it and decide what you're going to do about it. So that's how Proverbs is arranged. Wisdom about wisdom, chapters 1 to 9. Wisdom in the raw, chapters 10 to 31. So, got that stuff out of the way. Let's get to the really good part. Now, I want to ask the question, how do we get smart with Proverbs? How do we get smart with Proverbs? Number one, fear the Lord. The writer sets this in front of us clearly and concisely. Chapter 1, verse 8. He gets it right out there. Chapter 1, verse 7. He gets it right out there. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Well, what is this fear? Is it to be afraid of God? Well, a second use, a little later in chapter 9, verse 10, gives us a little more to work with. There he has the fear of the Lord, and it's parallel to the knowledge of the Holy One. So, the fear of the Lord is to know Him and to act like you know Him. In fact, I think I've concluded that two words combined give a great meaning to the word fear here. What is the fear of the Lord? It's to be afraid and it's to be awed. It's to be afraid and awed. It's like a policeman following you down the street, you know? What does everybody do when a cop gets behind you in your car? Well, what's the first thing you do? You check your speed, right? And then what do? You slow down just a little to make sure that you're under the toleration point. And then you check your speed about every 3 seconds just to be sure that it doesn't creep up on you. Now, you haven't broken any laws, but you know the policeman has authority. You know he can turn on his lights at any time and pull you over. So you're afraid of what he might do. You're afraid of what he might do, and you're awed by the authority that gives him the right to do it. So as long as he is behind you, you fear him. You are afraid, and you are awed by him. And I think that does a good job to get us started with understanding what it means to fear the Lord. But why do we do that? Why do we fear the Lord? Well, we know something about Him. We know His power. We know His authority. We know His holiness and we know His wrath. But maybe also you have a bigger picture of Him than that, and you know about His love, and you know about life, and you know about grace, and you know about goodness. You know those wonderful things about God. And so to fear the Lord is to be a little afraid of Him and to be a lot awed by Him at the same time. And I'll tell you what, that'll keep you in check. If you're a little afraid of Him and a lot awed by Him, that'll keep you in check. And that'll help you do the right thing. And it'll concern you when you don't do the right thing. So here's something I said at camp recently. I want parents to know what I said. You need to know what people are saying to your kids at camp. The author of this piece is unknown to me, though it is suggested that S.M. Lockridge composed it. But I was not able to confirm that. But here's the little piece that says God is first and last. He's the beginning and the end. He's the keeper of creation and the creator of all. He's the architect of the universe and the manager of all times. He always was and always is and always will be. Unmoved, unchanged, undefeated, and never undone. He is light and love, and He is Lord. He is goodness, kindness, gentleness, and faithfulness. He is holy, righteous, mighty, and powerful. He is, His bond is love. His yoke is easy. His burden is light. And His goal for us is an abundant life. And as you go with Him, when you fall, He'll lift you up. And when you fail, He'll forgive you. And when you're weak, He's strong. And when you're lost, He's your way. When you're broken, He will mend you. And when you face trials, He is with you. And when you face the worst, He'll give you the best. He is God, the giver of life and the forgiver of sins. He is our Father. He is our friend. He is our Savior and Redeemer. And one day, He will be our judge. And I'll tell you what, we need to bow before His authority. And we need to stand in awe of who He is and all He is. Amen? We need to bow before His authority and stand in awe of who He is and all He is. Fear God. Let me suggest a second thing. We need to listen to instructions and advice. So, when we're young, none of us wants to listen to advice, right? I'll tell you something. When we're old, none of us want to listen to advice. There's just something about thinking for ourselves and doing it our own way and deciding on our own that appeals to us. It feeds our ego and it strokes our pride. Well, I've been direct about that, kind of blunt, that we don't like advice. So let me be direct and blunt about something else. We are crazy, dumb, and stupid if we don't listen to instructions and advice. I know. Older is not always wiser. That's true. I know that. But it often means, older often means experience. It often means mistakes that have taught lessons. It often means been there and done that. And these can pay huge benefits. Listen to the Proverbs father. Chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. These will make you look even better than you look. Chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. The writer says that listening to instructions will add days and even years to your life. And it will add peace to boot. Isn't that great? Chapter 4, verses 1 to 4. Hear, O sons, a father's instruction, and be attentive that you may gain insight. For I give you good precepts. Do not forsake my teaching. When I was young, when I was a son, my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. Get insight. And so the father says, is my father taught me? So I am teaching you. Chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to understanding that you have deep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. What he's saying here is that you give attention to my wisdom and you'll have something to pass on to somebody else. People will be listening to what your words are. You'll have something to share with others. Chapter 6, verses 20 through 23. These are verses that I love. My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always and tie them around your neck. And when you walk, they will lead you. And when you lie down, they will watch over you. And when you're awake, they'll talk to you. When your parents are not there, you bind them around your neck. You tie them there. And when your parents are not there, they'll lead and they'll watch and they'll talk. You bind them tight. You tie them carefully. But whatever you do, don't disregard it. That would be dumb, stupid, and crazy. I think the writer of Proverbs rolls this into one statement. what he says about instructions. Chapter 4, verse 13. Keep hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. She is your life. And so the writer says, fear God. And then he says, listen to instructions and advice. Number 3. Face the truth and the reality of consequences. All of us, older and younger, would rather not face the reality of consequences. We find it a lot easier and much more fun to do what we want to do and not think about the outcomes, the results, the influences, the ramifications, the impact, the repercussions, the aftermath, the afterwards. Let me see, did I leave anything out? The hard and brutal fact, however, of life is that decisions have consequences, that actions produce afterwards. Suppress it, deny it, ignore it, but it won't go away. And it won't reduce its impact. Proverbs makes us face the reality of consequences. Chapter 1, verses 8 through 11 and verse 18. The father's first bit of advice for his son. So he opens with this. It's important, I think, to see that he's bold and direct. It's important to see, I think, that he is not positive and he is not diplomatic. He doesn't kind of work around to the point so that he can just make it just so-so. He gets right down to business. He said, my child, if sinners entice you, turn your back on them. They may say, come and join us. Let's hide and kill someone. Just for fun, let's ambush the innocent. Then in verse 18, he shows the consequences. But these people set an ambush for themselves, and they're trying to get themselves killed. Don't listen to them. Don't go with them. Lady Wisdom speaks. She says the same. She spells out the consequences of not listening to her. Listen to this. Chapter 1, beginning at verse 20. Lady Wisdom, come and listen to my counsel. I'll share my heart with you and make you wise. I called you so often, but you wouldn't come. I reached out to you, but you paid no attention. You ignored my advice and rejected the correction I offered. So I will laugh when you are in trouble. I will mock you when disaster overtakes you, when calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster engulfs you like a cyclone, and anguish and distress overwhelm you. When they cry for help, I will not answer. Though they anxiously search for me, they will not find me. For they hated knowledge and chose not to fear the Lord. They rejected my advice and paid no attention when I corrected them. Therefore, they must eat the bitter fruit of living their own way and choking on their own schemes. You see what he says? You see what she says? Plain and simple, choices have consequences. So this is the kind of wisdom the writer is getting in front of us as he works through the first 9 chapters. Now we come to straight talk. This is what a father says to his sons. Girls, you can easily flip this. If you'll think about your father having a talk with you. Because I'll tell you, smooth-talking guys are out there. Smooth-talking guys are out there, and you need to be aware. And I want to say a word to dads here. Dads, you need to have this talk with your daughters. She'll learn it from other people, but it'll be a lot healthier. It'll be a lot healthier coming from you. For her to realize from you the power of her beauty. Let her hear that from her dad. So, here's a father talking to his son. You thought I brought this because I had brain surgery, but I brought it because I want to have a talk. Chapter 5, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen carefully to my wise counsel. Then you will show discernment and your lips will express what you've learned. For the lips of an immoral woman are as sweet as honey and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as poison and dangerous as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave, for she cares nothing about the path of life. She staggers down a crooked trail and doesn't realize it. By the way, I'm reading from the New Living Translation. Don't get that confused with the New Living Bible, the New Living Translation. So now, verse 7, my son, listen to me. Never stray from what I'm about to say. Stay away from her. Don't go near the door of her house. If you do, you will lose your honor, and you will lose to merciless people all that you have achieved. Strangers will consume your wealth, and someone else will enjoy the fruit of your labor. In the end, you will groan in anguish when disease consumes your body. You will say, how I hated discipline. If only I had not ignored all the warnings. Oh, why didn't I listen to my teachers, and why didn't I pay attention to my instructors? I have come to the brink of utter ruin, and now I must face public disgrace. Drink water from your own well. Share your love only with your wife. Why spill the water of your springs in the streets, having sex with just anyone? You should reserve it for yourselves. Never share it with strangers. Let your wife be a fountain of blessing for you. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. She is a loving deer, a graceful doe. Let her breath satisfy you always. May you always be captivated by her love. Why be captivated, my son, by an immoral woman and fondle the breast of a promiscuous woman? Don't think about it. Don't do it. Proverbs chapter 7. Follow my advice, my son. Always treasure my commands. Obey my commands and live. Guard my instructions as you guard your own eyes. Tie them on your fingers as a reminder. Write them deep within your heart. Love wisdom like a sister and make insight a beloved member of your family. Let them protect you from an affair with an immoral woman, from listening to the flattery of a promiscuous woman. While I was at the window of my house, looking through the curtain, I saw some naive young men, and one in particular who lacked common sense. He was crossing the street near the house of an immoral woman, strolling down the path by her house. It was at twilight in the evening as deep darkness fell. The woman approached him, seductively dressed and sly of heart. She was brash. She was the rebellious type, never content to stay at home. She's often in the streets, in the markets, soliciting at every corner. She threw her arms around him and kissed him. And with a brazen look, she said, I've just made my peace offerings and fulfilled my vows. You're the one I was looking for. I came to find you, and here you are. My bed is spread with beautiful blankets, with colorful sheets of Egyptian linen. I perfume my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us fill our love until morning. Let's enjoy each other's caresses. For my husband is not at home. He's away on a long trip. He's taken a wallet full of money with him, and he won't return until later this month. So she seduced him with her pretty speech and enticed him with her flattery. And he followed her at once like an ox going to the slaughter. He was like a deer caught in a trap, awaiting the arrow that would pierce its heart. He was like a bird flying into a snare, little knowing it would cost him his life. So listen, my sons. Listen to me, my sons, and pay attention to my words. Don't let your heart stray toward her. Don't wander down her wayward path, for she has been the ruin of many. Many men have been her victims. Her house is the road to the grave. Her bedroom is the den of death. That's a father's advice to his sons. What do you think? You know, he said, don't go down her street. Don't look toward her door. He said, keep your way far from her. Don't you think that's a little dramatic? Don't you think that's overkill? Is that good advice? Come on, the son says. There's nothing wrong with the door. It's just a door. But on the other side of the door, what is she really saying? On the other side of the door, her lips are dripping honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. Is she trying to get you to do something that you know is wrong? This father is saying, stay away. Don't go near. Look at the end. Where will it lead? The end is bitter as poison and dangerous as a double-edged sword. Do you hear that? Do you hear that? That's a father's advice to his son or to his daughter. Number five, learn to be wise about the gray of life. Let me ask you, how do we get gray? Well, it's the mixture of black and white. Now, you can read a lot of things into what I'm about to say, but you'll be incorrect and wrong to do that. I'm using black and white in a specific way, so please listen to it that way. There are two ways presented in Proverbs. Two paths, two ways. One is associated with being upright, having integrity, dealing in justice and equity. It's a good path. The other is the way of evil. People on this path forsake a path of uprightness and walk in the ways of darkness. It is a way marked by crooked paths and devious ways. So you tell me, which is the light path and which is the dark path? Which is the white path and which is the black path? I'm asking that because I want us to think about the area between the two. I want us to talk about the area between the two paths. It's what I call the gray of life. It's a murky way. So let's think about your friends just a moment. Let's think about your friends. Many people in the world are not believers. They're not Christians. Are they decent people? Yes. Yes, they are. Are they responsible, intelligent, hardworking, kind, generous? Yes, yes, yes. And some of them do fun stuff that you enjoy. So what's the problem? Can't these people be my friends? Well, yes, they can. But you have to be wise in the grays. Some of these people will match your personality. And so they will be your friends. And they'll do fun stuff that you like to do. And so they will be your friends. But is there any gray here? Well, what do these people do on Sunday night? And what do they do on Wednesday night? And what about their language across the board? And what about their moral foundation? What about their general thinking about creation and about salvation? Are there any grays there? And what about your church friends? Are there any grays there? Well, let's try this. How can we be wise in dealing with the gray? What about this? Associate only with Christians. Associate only with Christians. Where does that get you? Well, it might get you into trouble. Because not everyone who says he or she is a Christian is in fact a Christian. Anyway, most of us need friends who are not Christians. Because if we don't have any friends who are Christians, how will we ever lead anybody to Christ? We're to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. We're to be out there shaking and shining. So we need people who are not Christians to be our friends. So what about this? Associate only with people who have character. That guides you in a healthier, wiser way, I think. Because people who have character will eventually be Christians. Character will inevitably lead them in that direction. Well, let's try this one. Associate with people who are Church of Christ. Or associate only with people who want to know what God says so they can do it. Who listen to Him. Now here's some gray. Here's some gray. You have a friend who is a member of the Church of Christ, as you are. But she's disrespectful of her parents. Or you have a guy who's a member of the Church of Christ and he's a guy who uses bad language. So what do you do? Well, I'm glad you asked because I have three answers to that. Number one, you be aware. You get educated. You know that the grays are out there and you learn what they are all about and why they exist. They exist because one single person is not everything he or she needs to be. He has a areas that he needs to work on. Now, don't write him off. Don't write her off. But be aware of what's happening. be aware of what's happening. Number two, be informed. You know, we have a lot of information in our world, so we think we're experts about everything. We often aren't humble enough to receive instruction, because humility is required for receiving instruction. It says, I don't know everything I need to know, and that I can use some instruction. So, be informed. It may be helpful here for you to isolate certain behaviors, for you to recognize that she's a good person, but she's being disrespectful to her parents, and that behavior is not acceptable. Don't just overlook her behavior because you happen to like her or know her. Consider her behavior as a part of the mix. Be informed. Know what's going on in the relationship. And then be careful. Exercise care and caution in dealing with the grays, knowing that it's a mixture of black and white. I'll tell you, the dark side can be dangerous. It can be dangerous. You need to know that she can influence you as well as you influencing her. You need to know that she can cause you to think about your parents in a different way rather than you causing her to think in a different way. Be careful. Open your eyes and see what's happening. So what can we do to have wisdom in the gray? We can be aware and be informed and be careful. As you circulate among your friends, well, this is some advice I always gave my children. When you hear something from other people, not just your parents, when you start hearing the same thing from other people, listen to them. They are seeing some things that you don't see. Or they're seeing some things more clearly than you're seeing them. When they keep asking, is that the one? Is she the one you should marry? Sit up and take notice. Be aware. Be informed. Be careful. Sit up and take notice. Because here's what's happening in your life. You love him and you love her. And you plan to change him or her. But please, please, base your marriage on reality and not on the possibility of change. Base it on reality and not on the possibility of change. So as you circulate among your friends, you start hearing the same thing from a variety of people, you sit up and take notice, because they're seeing something that you don't see. And you can learn from them. And then I want to say to us that we need to base ourselves in a way that we're careful in the way we surround ourselves with people. You can be surrounded by everybody. You know, everybody is going to see this movie. Everybody is doing this. Really? Everybody? You're in the gray here. You're in the gray. The water's murky. Is what everybody else is going to see, is that your standard? Is what everybody is doing, is that your reason? When you hear yourself say those words, be aware, be informed, be careful. Because you're probably about to defend something you shouldn't be defending. And you're about to do something that you ought not to do. And you're doing it, justifying it, about this is what everybody is doing. But we know that isn't true. Be wiser than that. Be wiser than that. Well, finally this evening, and that's the word that the people always look for from the preacher. I learned from studying Philippians that finally does not always mean finally, because Paul says it in chapter 3 and he says it again in chapter 4. But finally, I want to challenge you to do something brave and bold right now. I want you to take out your cell phone. And you can go ahead and see how many text messages you've had since I started speaking. Now, if you have an iPhone, you can move your fingers to the top buttons and push them, whatever you have to do to turn the thing off. And turn it off. Slide to power it off. And commit yourself to leaving it off for the next 7 minutes. Turn to whomever is beside you and ask them to tell you their story. The people beside you are living and breathing. They're not texts. They're living and breathing. And they have a story. And ask them how they became a Christian. And you tell them your story of how you became a Christian. And if it doesn't work with the person right next to you, go down a person or two and take somebody with you. So form a little group and talk about the road you're on. My time is just about up, so I want to give you a little time to get the stories flowing. I know this might be a little uncomfortable, but try that right now. Turn to the person next to you and get the story flowing. Include more than one person in your conversation. Here are a couple of prompts that I thought would help you. Tell me about the setting when you began walking with Jesus. Or tell about the point in your life that you became completely serious about Jesus. Got your stories going? I'm going to leave you now, and I hope you will make the most of this rich and rare opportunity. It's a moment in your life, and I hope you'll use it wisely to share moving and motivating stories. Everybody has a story, and if we can share each other's stories to move and motivate each other to know God better and to serve Him more, to walk with Jesus, to stay with Him all the way to the end. That has the potential to enrich and even change your life. I'll tell you, it has the potential to enrich and to change your life. So God bless us as we pursue those stories that will help us really, really be wise. Thank you.